A very good Monday. Welcome to today's edition of the Maya Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In addition to feature agricultural news reports, I'll bring you national and regional agricultural news headlines. And I'll start with regional ag news right after this.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit Phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
A group of Republican House members last week called on their Senate colleagues to pass a bipartisan farm labor bill that calls for overhauling the H-2A program. The lawmakers came armed with a new study from Texas A&M highlighting new data on the importance of stabilizing the agricultural workforce as one means to help deal with inflation and prices. The A&M study shows that ensuring farmers have a stable, secure, reliable, and legal workforce is crucial to keeping America's grocery shelves stocked, combating inflation, and lowering food prices for all domestic consumers, according to the study. More migrant and H-2A workers would lower food inflation. More migrant and H-2A workers are associated with higher average wages as well as lower unemployment. Also, denying petitions for nationalization is associated with larger consumer prices and higher inflation. Approving more petitions for naturalization is associated with lower inflation, according to the study. The GOP lawmakers spearheading the press conference at the Capitol, Doug LaMalfa of California, Dan Newhouse of Washington, Jim Baird of Indiana, and Mike Simpson of Idaho. The Farm Workforce Modernization Act would overhaul the H-2A visa program for workers, providing dairy farmers and other producers the opportunity to bring in workers for three-year visas, assuring year-round labor needs are met. Initially, there would be up to 20,000 initial year-round visas for the first 3 years, with capacity to increase the visa volumes if the Department of Labor and the Department of Agriculture consider it necessary. It would also legalize hundreds of thousands of farm workers who are working in the country now illegally. These workers would qualify for five-year renewable visas, including options for permanent legal status, and it would establish a national e-verify system for all agricultural employers. After a short respite from high temperatures, the Salinas Valley is once again experiencing a heat wave. Morning lows are ranging from the upper 40s to lower 60s, and daytime highs for inland areas are in the 80s to low 100s, with the coastal areas remaining in the 70s. The cycle of rising high pressure and heat spikes every 2 weeks has been ongoing since June and is not typical of Salinas Valley weather patterns. Many crops have reacted poorly to the heat and elevated humidity levels, causing widespread quality and shelf life concerns and commodity and value-added crops. As a result, mark on first crop and ready, set, serve specifications have been harder to meet due to crops not meeting the specifications. They are currently substituting a higher percentage of mark on best available. The most common heat-related defects observed are in baby leaf and other lettuces, where they are seeing bolting, growth cracks, inconsistent growth and fluctuating density, increased insect pressure, internal burn and tip burn, shortened shelf life and sunburn, as well as scalding. And in broccoli, there are accelerated growth and oversized crowns being observed, along with dehydration, a hollow core, pin rot, shortened shelf life, and yellowing. In strawberries, there is decreased size, lower volume, increased bruising, soft texture, and a shortened shelf life. Mark-on inspectors continue to work with suppliers to allocate the best product for their orders. Maintaining a cold chain throughout the distribution is critical for maximizing quality and shelf life. Natural Delights' Sweet and Salty Almond Mini Medjools were named Best Dates in this year's Good Housekeeping Healthy Snack Awards. This is the brand's second major media award for Mini Medjools, which launched last fall and has continued to gain popularity with shoppers looking for nutritious and wholesome snacks. The Good Housekeeping Nutrition Lab results called the product a wholesome snack option that stood out to their judges for its fiber and potassium. The lab added that the naturally sweet option was a hit with testers of all ages who described it as flavorsome and totally innovative. Driscoll's and industry partners announced the winners of the Agricultural Plastics Innovation Challenge. Carbon Upcycling Technologies and Anera Corporation were selected for their innovation, business viability, focus on sustainability, scalability of their solution, and the strength of their ecosystem. The selection process included more than 200 innovations from four continents with a range of solutions. 14 candidates were selected as finalists, and each was evaluated by a jury comprised of industry, scientists, innovators, and investors. The use of plastic films in berry production has proven to have significant benefits, including weed suppression, increased yield, and many others, but they continue to be one of the most difficult materials to recycle, which is why the development of alternative materials to plastic film is so important to the berry industry. They are really impressed with the sheer number of applicants, and they've known agricultural plastics pose challenges that they cannot solve alone, so they're inspired to not only see industry collaboration, but to see people trying to tackle this challenge around the world, according to James DuBois, Senior Environmental Manager with Driscoll's. Carbon Upcycling was recognized for its biocompostable films and patent carbon capture and conversion technology. The technology allows for the efficient capture and conversion of CO2 into high-performance materials that can be used as alternatives to plastic films used in agricultural production. They are thrilled to partner with Driscoll's to not only show a low-carbon biocombustible solution, but one that enriches soil health and fuels plant growth at the end of life. They are eager to show that green can be better in the deployment at the research farm later this summer, according to Peter Zhao, polymer engineering lead with Carbon Upcycling. Anera Corporation was recognized for its technology that addresses the industry's need for new recycling processes. Anera operates a plastic reformation technology that converts difficult-to-recycle ag plastic into market-ready transportation fuels without toxic catalysts or harmful emissions. Anera is finding a creative outlet for the recycling of agricultural plastics that would otherwise be destined for landfills. They are providing an attractive alternative to costly fossil fuels, according to Thomas Taggart, Vice President of Operations with California Giant Berry Farms.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, supporting the industry with on-farm innovation through production research, advocacy for government programs, and driving consumer demand. Doing more together.
The California Central Valley supplies 80% of almonds globally, so ensuring the health of these trees is essential. However, young trees are highly susceptible to damage from phytoparasitic nematodes, and chemical fumigation is often necessary to ensure protection. Rory Crowley, a conventional almond and walnut grower who is now with Project Apis M, partnered with the Simmons Lab at UC Davis to find a natural, sustainable, yet effective alternative to chemical fumigation. Researchers in the Simmons Lab, working in collaboration with the UC Davis Western Center for Agricultural Safety, specialize in biosolarization, a soil amendment technology that combines biological, thermal, and natural chemical control to reduce plant diseases without fumigation. Biosolarization also provides a closed-loop recycling strategy for agricultural waste streams like almond hulls and shells. These byproducts provide valuable soil amendments due to their high organic carbon content and are co-located with almond orchards.
You know, this kind of really grew out of a project that I did out of the Almond Leadership Program. And that was, we had all this excess hull and shell seemingly coming off of the processors with the almond processors. And, you know, some of those markets were drying up. And so it just made a lot of sense to try to find, you know, alternative practices. And so that was about the time Karen Lapsley back then, I mean, I was working for Nicholas Nutt at that time, and Karen Lapsley put me together with Dr. Simmons, and Dr. Simmons had been thinking about some cool stuff with, you know, just food residues. And so we just said, hey, let's try to put something together. That's kind of how that came about.
Chris Simmons, who heads the Simmons Lab at UC Davis, explained some of the components necessary for biosolarization, as well as how the project was set up. The three components necessary are soil amendments, transparent plastic tarp, and a drip line irrigation. These three components act synergistically and can provide positive feedback loops. For instance, high microbial activity stimulated by amendments can consume the limited soil oxygen and produce heat as a byproduct. Similarly, the application of amendments and irrigation can change thermal properties of soil and increase solar heating. Because of these combined factors, effective biosolarization treatment durations can be as short as 10 days or less. For the actual pre-plant orchard demonstration itself, Crowley's 8.5-acre almond block in Chico was used as the demonstration site for pre-plant orchard biosolarization back in June of 2017, and trees were planted the following January. A whole rich waste stream and a whole and shell mixed waste stream from a local nut processor were selected as soil amendments.
What we did initially is a lab study where we could take residues from almond processing, put them in our soil bioreactors at varying rates, and then look at the kinetics of conditions that we know are likely to impact and suppress pests and pathogens. And what we saw at the lab scale was that you could amend this whole and shell material into the soil at a rate of around 1% total mass, and you could get robust fermentation and organic acid biopesticide production in a fairly short time period, within 1 week. And so that gave us some promising signals that the conditions that were likely to be effective would be scalable. We didn't have to add an outlandish amount of this material to the soil or anything like that. The time scale was more or less comparable to the treatment period that you would employ for traditional fumigation. And so everything was in alignment where we did feel confident then taking that to a large scale deployment in the field. And so that's basically mimicking the conditions that we used in the bioreactors in terms of the amount of whole and shell that we applied to the soil, the depth to which we incorporated it, the amount of moisture that we added, the tarp material that we used to cover these plots and promote oxygen depletion and solar heating. It's basically just copying all those conditions at the small scale, but doing so using traditional farm operations.
Concluding the project, both biosolarization and solarization are effective methods for the inactivation of lesion and ring nematodes in the short term, but biosolarization may have longer-term suppression. Effects at deep soil levels greater than 12 inches have not been fully investigated. Additionally, soils treated with biosolarization have higher nitrogen, carbon, potassium, and organic matter levels than non-amended soils during the first 2 years of growth, according to results. Trees may take 2 years to adjust to disturbances caused by biosolarization, and growers should conduct trials on test plots before scaling up, according to Simmons and Crowley.
At the soil level, what we saw is that biosolarization accelerated and maintained long-term suppression of root lesion and ring nematodes, and for about 2 years, elevated levels of organic nitrogen and potassium. Now, at the tree level, you heard Roy talk about in the first year post-treatment, actually, the growth rate of those trees in the treated plots was a bit slower than the untreated controls, which was surprising, but at some level it does make sense because the process represents a radical transformation of the soil chemical and to an extent physical environment. And so it could take some time for trees to adapt to that changed environment before they can fully capitalize on the benefits of reduced pest stress and the presence of these plant nutrients. After that 1 year adaptation period, we did see the trees catch up. We saw other indicators of enhanced performance. We've done multispectral imaging of the orchard canopy and have seen that for certain varieties of almonds in the biosolarized soil, they have greater chlorophyll content. So presumably they are capturing more energy and have increased metabolism. And we hope are investing more in the number and the quality of the fruit on those trees. And that's really where we're going next. We need that ultimate indicator that every grower is going to care about at the end of the day, which is the yield and the quality of the product. And so that's the goal for this upcoming summer, to start to capture some of the phenomena that you heard Roy talk about in terms of the time to maturity, time to hole split, for instance, but then also just getting that tons per acre yield measurement that is going to be so key to grower adoption. But leading up to that kind of ultimate metric performance, we do have a number of very promising indicators that the trees are primed for increased performance on both the soil and the tree health side.
Crawley and Simmons truly believe in the practice and its results and hope that more growers in the future will commercialize with incentive programs. For My Ag Life, I'm Taylor Charlstrom.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
40% or more of the nation remains in drought for a record-setting period, with that streak expected to continue for the foreseeable future. USA Ag News reporter Rod Bain.
The record-setting length of our nation's drought continues to expand. In fact, as USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey points out,
we still have more than 40% of the country in drought, and that has been going on for what is coming up on 2 years, going all the way back to September of 2020.
93 weeks and counting. Putting this streak in perspective,
the previous record in the drought monitor era, which goes back to 1999, was set during the historic drought of 2012-2013. And during that drought, our longest streak of 40% drought coverage was just 68 consecutive weeks. So we have gone far beyond that. We've gone a half a year beyond that point.
With no end to this streak in sight. Although Rippey says signs were hopeful last month to such an end.
Did dip to about the mid-40s in mid-June, but now we've headed back the other direction in late June, almost a half the country back in drought.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture has announced that K. Lookash Produce satisfied a reparation order in the amount of $21,300 issued under the Perishable Agricultural Commodities Act involving an unpaid produce transaction. The Vineland, New Jersey company had met its obligations and is now free to operate in the produce industry. Kelly Nakash was listed as the officer, director, and/or major stockholder of the business and may now be employed or affiliated with any PACA licensee. The USDA also announced that Sunrise Produce Incorporated satisfied a reparation order in the amount of $13,414 issued under PACA involving unpaid produce transactions. The Jessup, Maryland company can continue operating in the produce industry upon applying for and being issued a PACA license. June 2022 continued the run of months with temperatures above the 20th century average. NOAA's June climate report notes that June 2022 was a 46th consecutive June and a 450th consecutive month with temperatures at least somewhat above the 20th century average. World average temperatures were 0.87 degrees Celsius or 1.57 degrees Fahrenheit above the 20th century average. This was the sixth warmest June in the 143-year record. There was also a new record percentage of the Earth's surface, where June temperatures were the highest on record for the month of June. There was record June warmth in parts of China, the northern, western, and southeastern Pacific Ocean, small areas of the Middle East, and in northern Africa. In all, 7.68% of the world land and ocean surfaces had record high June temperatures. That breaks the previous record for June set back in 2010 of 7.37%. Records of this topic began in 1951. American Agri-Women will host a global food and energy supply conversation later this month. AAW planned the July 27th event in response to member and public interest in a group's recent symposium entitled Rebirth, Renew, Refuel, Balancing Our Natural Resources. AA leaders recognize that market volatility, increasing food and input prices, food shortages at home and abroad, and civil unrest around the globe impact U.S. farmers and a supply chain's ability to produce and distribute food. AAW President Heather Hampton Nodal said that members are asking questions daily about national policies and their implications for farming, ranching, and forestry. She said their members want to understand why we we are paying around $6 a gallon for diesel fuel, and the administration released oil reserves to sell overseas, or why our country stopped a domestic pipeline project and then met with Saudi Arabia to negotiate for more oil. One panelist in a conversation is Dean Foreman, chief economist of the American Petroleum Institute and an expert in the economics and markets for oil, natural gas, and power. Hampton Nodal said that they don't expect Dean to speak for the administration's actions, but they have confidence in his knowledge of the industry to help people to understand the dynamics and constraints of the energy marketplace. Foreman will be joined by Roger Cryan, chief economist with the American Farm Bureau Federation, who has decades of experience in analyzing food and agriculture economics. Cryan spoke about the implications of the war in Ukraine for food and agriculture to participants at AAW's June fly-in to Washington, D.C. Members were impressed by Roger's depth of knowledge, and they are thrilled he can participate in the conversation on July 27th. Again, the virtual event will be held on Wednesday, July 27th at 1 p.m. Central Time. It is accessible through pre-registration at AmericanAgriWomen.org. Registration is required to participate.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
Every season, California rice farmers try to minimize the amount of water they use because of their commitment to the environment. In California, rice is planted into a flooded field from April to May, and that field usually remains flooded with 3 to 6 inches of water until shortly before harvest. With the ongoing drought, stretching meager water supplies has become top of mind for many rice growers. UC Cooperative Extension rice specialist Bruce Lindquist said reducing water use begins before planting when growers select fields with heavy soils and low percolation potential. Kind of like a bathtub, these fields hold water without letting it seep deeper. Growers also can plant later in the season and use shorter maturing varieties. With planting season in the past, Lindquist said an obvious water-saving measure during the season is reducing spills, which is the water that drains out the end of the field.
Usually when rice farmers are managing their water, they have water coming into the field, and then they let water trickle out the tailwater or the outlet of that field. And what they're trying to do is that accomplishes two things. It makes it very easy to maintain your water height within the field. But it also, if there are salts in the field, it also allows for some of those salts to get flushed out. So those are good reasons to have a little bit of spill. But when you're trying to conserve water, you can really forego that. It takes a little bit of closer management of your water, paying attention on hot days. You're probably going to lose a little bit more water and vice versa. So you need to keep a better eye on your water to manage your inflows to kind of match your losses, which are ET and any kind of percolation that you may have in that field. But you can do that usually with pretty little risk, especially later in the season. And especially if your water is good quality, it doesn't have much salinity in it. In most cases in California, the water quality is very good.
In the middle of the season, growers can let the water levels drop around panicle initiation, which is the start of the reproductive stage. Lindquist said in his trials, he hasn't seen much of a water savings, but growers in the Mid-South have. In dry years like this, he said he has heard anecdotes from growers who have seen water savings. It also depends on the field's soil type.
We've been looking at drain periods in the middle of the season for a number of reasons, partly to maybe reduce greenhouse gases, partly to reduce arsenic uptake in rice. And what we've typically found is that by doing that, you don't really reduce water use very much in a typical rice field in a typical year. Certainly in other places in the Mid-South where they're doing some of these mid-season drains, a lot of the the driver for adoption of those technologies has been because of water savings. But because we have very little percolation in the rice soils here in California, they're very heavy clays, very little percolation, you don't get much water saving. However, anecdotally, I've heard a lot of growers talk about in some of these drought years like we're experiencing this year, where there's a lot of fallow fields, it's been a very dry winter, growers often report using a lot more water in those years. And to me, what that signifies is that there's a lot more percolation going on. There's a lot more downward losses of water. Or you might even be in a field that has a, you know, that does lose a lot of water down below the root zone. If you're in that kind of a situation or in a year like that where you seem to be losing a lot of water, a drain kind of around PI, we often kind of tie it in with a propanil drain because growers already drop water to apply propanil because it's contact herbicide. We suggest extending that drain. And if you can extend it a week, sometimes even up to 10 days, we found that you don't reduce yields. Yields stay the same. If there is percolation in the field, you're not going to be getting any percolation losses during that period. So you would be saving water during that period. I've been to a lot of fields just driving around. It's not just this year, but pretty much every year. And I see a lot of fields following propanil application that are pretty dry, certainly dry enough to walk on, sometimes even cracking. So it's not uncommon for growers to let the field dry out a little bit more, and that may save water.
Growers also may be able to save water at harvest time by draining their fields earlier. But Lindquist recommended taking the rice variety into consideration before moving forward. Yields of some varieties will see no ill effects from early draining. Again, from what he's hearing from growers, Lindquist said M211, a relatively new high-yielding variety, is finicky, and it may not perform up to its potential with early draining.
It is a good opportunity to save water. I mean, if your typical management program is to kind of keep water kind of coming onto your field, and then you stop the irrigation water, you know, roughly 3 weeks before you anticipate harvesting, and you pull the boards that same day, you've got a lot of water in your field. Anywhere from, I don't know, 2 to 6 inches sitting in the field that you're just draining out. If you plan for that, that you know that you want water off your field at a certain day, you can, instead of pulling the boards, you let your water subside naturally. It's going to subside naturally due to evapotranspiration and any kind of percolation or seepage losses that you have in that field. That varies tremendously across fields. So it's hard to put a number and a day to it. ET is pretty constant, and you can pretty much estimate that ET losses during, you know, these kind of late August, September period is going to be about 1/4 inch a day. So if your water was a bathtub, you'd lose about 1/4 inch a day in that kind of loss. So, you know, if you have 2 inches of water, you'd have 8 days before that would drop down. So if you know what your losses are going to be, you can just shut off your water before that time and let the water subside so that you're at a condition where you would normally be if you pulled the boards. So some things to kind of think about when you're guessing on that. So I mentioned earlier that in these dry years with a lot of fallow ground around people using pumps, it seems like there's more percolation losses in those fields. So you'd probably want to at least plan for about 1/2 inch loss a day in terms of how much water, standing water, would you lose in any given day. I used an example in a recent newsletter that if you typically pull the boards around 25 days after heading, and you're wanting that surface water to be gone by, say, 28 days. If you have 5 inches of water in that field, that 5 inches, if you're losing 1/2 inch a day, that's 10 days of that water would be in that field that you could use. So you could turn off your water 10 days before then, and you still have enough water in that field. It would be the same soil moisture conditions as you would have had if you pulled the boards at 25 days. So that's one way where you could save a good over a week of irrigation inputs into your field. You mentioned a really important point that makes it rough for growers to try this, and that varieties like M206, M210, M105, their grain quality is very good, even if they dry out a little more. What we've seen, and again, this is anecdotal, but a lot of growers have kind of mentioned it, that M211, which there's quite a bit of M211 out there this year. It's really sensitive to having that soil dry up too quick, and then that really starts to affect grain quality of M211. So you've got to be very cautious on this recommendation.
Depending on when rice fields were planted, the variety's days to maturity, and temperatures the rest of the season, growers will begin to drain rice fields in mid to late August. Most of the state's rice is harvested in September and October. This is Vicki Boyd reporting for My Ag Life.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing Team, thank you for listening.